Fantasy Focus Baseball is brought to you by 4hims.com. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it is too late. It is easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you have lost. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or just do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science? The solution is 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room. No awkward doctor visits. You can save hours by going to 4hims.com. It's so easy. Answer a few quick questions. Doctor will review and prescribe you the products that will suit you best. Products are shipped directly to your door. So order now. Fantasy Focus Baseball listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/FFB. That's FORHIMS.com/FFB. 4hims.com/FFB. I remember that because, I heard people that were playing that year, so I don't know why I know that.
We were just not even born yet. We just used our time machines to have seen the 86 season, that's all.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Thursday morning, September 20th, 2018. I am Eric, he is Tristan, and producer Anthony Calatayud pushes all the buttons. Tristan, only a couple of shows left of the season, as not this weekend, but next weekend, the regular season will indeed end. And we're already seeing some teams, shut down players. Zach Wheeler got shut down. The AL race is pretty much over, so we might see, I don't know, maybe Nelson Cruz doesn't play that much last week. The point is,
Rays hating.
Come on. The Rays are just as far out as the Phillies, and nobody thinks the Phillies have a shot. Right?
I know. I still love the story, and they're mathematically still in it. I know it's highly unlikely. It was a 0.1% playoff odds for them, but, yeah, what are you going to do?
I mean, look, I hope that the Rays and the Phillies are still playing for something next weekend. I do. The Phillies, that'll be decided this weekend. They almost have to sweep the Braves in a four-game set, which seemed really unlikely to me. Rays just keep on. I love what the Rays are doing. I just, what an amazing season for this Rays team. We spent time talking about Rays individual players on this show in the past month because they're going to win 90 plus games.
Actually, I've got fun trivia for you if you'd like, Rays related.
Oh, yeah.
Trivia that Eric won't know.
I won't know.
You probably will not know this, but it's a fun one because Blake Snell won his 20th game. We saw that.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah.
Ryan Yarbrough, too. He won his 15th game, which is pretty impressive considering
how many of them as a starter.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, he's got six starts for the year and he's got 15 wins. Now, that's because 13 of them have been relief wins and most of those are a result of the official scores decisions and the like. However, with 13 relief wins, he's the first pitcher to have accrued that many. Since when? Who's the last guy to accrue 13 relief wins? And I could tell you the number of years if you'd like.
Remember, didn't Elroy Face have a year where he was 18-1 for the Pirates? It's probably more recent than that.
Yes, it was 1959. He was 18-1 with a 260 relief ERA, 93 and a third innings, 47 games finished. But it was more recent than that.
John Hiller, he had a year where he won double digits.
We're both way too young to have ever remembered this, even though we probably remember it.
Mark Eichhorn.
Wow.
Is that right?
That is one of the two. Well done. Yeah.
One of the two.
Yeah, okay. Two guys in the same year won 14 in relief. Mark Eichhorn. That is the toughest one. Nice job.
I remember that because, I heard people that were playing that year. Wait a second. I wasn't playing that year, so I don't know why I know that.
We were just not even born yet. We just used our time machines to have seen the 86 season. That's all. So it was the tandem closers of the New York Mets, and Roger McDowell was the one who won 14.
Roger McDowell. Okay.
Yep. Jesse Roscoe, by the way, had 13-83. So, you know, they each did it in a couple of years.
I got to tell you, I enjoyed that way of relief pitching more than this current one. I mean, I don't really enjoy eight pitchers pitching in a game, like everybody going one inning, all these strikeouts, everybody's throwing 98. I kind of enjoyed it a little bit more when Tug McGraw was throwing 82 and getting outs. That's for growing up. So you had, anyway, this is the way it is now. There's been some great relief performances this year, of course. How many pitchers have 100 strikeouts out of the bullpen? I'm going to check. 3 or 4? I don't think it's that many. So,
I mean, it's
a big deal. The problem is they don't throw enough innings, you know, like.
Hey, but Tansas has the record for consecutive 100 K years.
Four, right? Is it 4 years in a row?
Yeah, I believe it is. Yeah. It's the record.
So we do Ryan Yarbrough has 101 strikeouts. That doesn't really count. Well, he has 101 as a reliever, but again, he's not the relievers, the true relievers that have 100 strikeouts. Josh Hader, Edwin Diaz, Dellin Betances, Adam Ottavino, and Brad Hand. Okay, there you go.
Yep. By the way,
a lot of saves.
Let's bring back the Tony La Russa mix and match relief thing. Remember that 7 day thing he did in '94. I'd love to see that come back.
Yes. Yeah.
It would be horrible for fantasy.
He was talking about that. they were talking about it on MLB Network this week, and he's one of those old school guys that doesn't understand the current. He hates people like you and me, you know, who talk analytically. But he was doing something smart a long time ago. Anyway, let's get to the news of the day. Here's the buzz. All right, what should we get to? So we're looking ahead to not only next week, but also next year on today's show. So you do the fantasy forecaster and you do it so well, and it's pretty much updated every day, right? But the final week version will be released on Friday. So give us a hint for those people that are still playing for something in the final week of the season. Again, we're already seeing some weird pitching stuff going on. We're going to see some pitchers starting that probably haven't started all year. Some hitters are going to sit. How do you even approach this forecaster?
You try to maximize the most likely singular matchup for your starting pitchers, because most people do not have a right to expect two starts from your pitchers. So a couple of notes on here. In the ESPN games, we don't count any of the playoff, the tiebreaker games, anything that is after that Sunday, the 30th, those won't count for your standings. So just be prepared for that. So if you're assuming you might get handed a free extra start there, just be careful. You got to check your league's rules. And in our game, we're not going to count that. The other is that teams that are in contention or out of contention and don't need to rely on a guy in that final weekend or that final day specifically, which, by the way, all the games start at the same time. We love that. It's not going to matter in the AL, but what are you going to do?
Yes.
Those pitchers could get bumped. So just as I say, look for the most likely projected singular start for your guy and go based on that. To give you some of the 10-day, we have 11 days left, but this is a 10-day look for hitting schedules. Some of the better ones that are out there include the Red Sox, who unfortunately are going to be resting guys. They're facing some weaker teams. The Rockies. The Rockies actually are going to play their final 7 games at home, and then they have 3 that are coming up this weekend in Arizona. So they're going to have good ballparks there. Detroit, a team that, you know, I mean, there's guys are widely available. You could throw in the back of your lineup. Actually have a pretty good one there, especially their left-handed hitters. Astros have a pretty good schedule for hitting the rest of the way. The Yankees do as well. You know, they're still trying to maintain the home field advantage for that. The Phillies. Eric, you know, the Phillies, they do have a good set of hitting matchups. They've got that 4-game series in Coors. That's going to help.
I'm not sure how many Phillies you want to count on, though, because the lineup is kind of weird every day. Obviously, we know certain Phillies that are going to play, but Rhys Hoskins is rostered in all leagues already. How many Phillies? You're going to pick up Aaron Altair next week? I can't. Cesar Hernandez? You just can't. I can't do it.
I think it's one where I've noticed maybe that Carlos Santana is doing some of the on-base stuff that he's done in his past, and getting those games in at third base kind of presents a little bit of an advantage. I don't know that he's out there as a free agent, but I feel better about using the players who might be on my roster already.
That's fair. It's just that there's few Phillies that have really been good offensively this season. And Santana, from a fantasy aspect, batting .233 with 23 home runs and no other help. I guess 80 runs is nice. It's just not a whole lot there. Is he eligible at third base for next year yet? I don't think
he's got the 10. He's got the 10 to get it this year.
He won't get there.
Right. Most teams,
he
by the way,
won't get to 20. Although he could be their third base,
he could actually get to 20 because, well, actually, I don't know if the Phillies had gone over the 152 yet. The major league average for remaining teams, remaining games per team is exactly 10. There are 300 games left to play, exactly an average of 10 per team. Interestingly enough, you want the righty lefty advantages?
Sure, absolutely. People listening, want every advantage they can get.
So Braves are facing a heavy amount of right-handed pitching, so that leans to that side. The Orioles will be facing a lot of left-handed pitching. Looks like they might be facing half left-handed starters in their games. That's an unusually large amount.
Trey Mancini, that's good for
definitely. Yeah. He's played quite well. Cubs are playing a lot of righties, and you know that they like to mix and match, so lean on the lefties. We mentioned Ben Zobrist on the show before. Indians play a lot of righties. I think they're going to be going more for
Happ.
The... Ian Happ could be as well. Yeah, Ben. Yeah. Angels face a lot of righties.
Ray Allen could run.
Yep. Mets. This is actually extremely advantageous here. They're playing within the division, the Mets, which means they're going to face what's a division of extremely right-handed heavy rotations. And I've pointed this out that a lot of the Mets lefty hitters are out there in a surprisingly large percentage of leagues, including Jeff McNeil. So they might face nothing but right-handed starters the rest of the way. Pirates face at least five lefty starters, and so do the Padres. And the Padres have some righty power-hitting guys who you could pick up, including Hunter Renfro has actually been picked up in a lot of leagues, but Franmil Reyes.
Several Mets are on the ESPN Most Added list right now. Jeff McNeil is there, number 4, up 18% over the past week. Michael Conforto is number 7, up 16%. Jay Bruce is on that list. He's still available in 80% of leagues. That's all right-handed pitching next week, so that's pretty interesting. Most added player right now is Adalberto Mondesi, and he should be. He had another combo mill yesterday. Yasiel Puig, man, if Puig could just hit lefties, like that's a 35 home run season. If he could just figure out how to hit lefties and play more, had another home run last night. Amazing.
Yep. When Puig wants to turn it on, he sure can.
He can. Let's get to the news of the past couple of days while we're here. Trevor Story's elbow. So the Rockies claim that Story will play on Friday. Earlier in the week, but after our Monday show, there was speculation that he had a UCL tear and he might need Tommy John surgery, which means he would be out for like half of next season in addition to like the rest of this season. Do you feel confident with Trevor Story for next week, this weekend? I guess if he's active and playing, you got to play him, but he concerns me.
Yeah, he concerns me too. And I think you are going to, if he comes back, have to play him because there aren't really... Look, there just aren't alternatives at that position. You're not going to get a player who has the potential thump that Trevor Story provides you to check the Rockies. I scrolled right past him. Yeah, the Rockies definitely because of the heavy number of course I mentioned a minute ago with that. You're going to have to lean on them. The interesting part about this, just fantasy-wise, is Ian Desmond getting the start there the other day. So if things don't go particularly well, and I hope we'd get an answer for that before the weekly lineups lock on Monday, maybe Desmond sneaks in a couple games there. Maybe you have a league where you just need the one game requirement. Keep an eye on that.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of watching for position eligibility purposes, nothing there. But for next season, Santana, the Phillies do have 11 games left. If he plays 10 games at third, that's a big difference. Him being eligible at third in addition to first base for next year. He may not be a Philly, but, you know, still, that's kind of important. We're all watching Francisco. See, now, Francisco Mejia is at 6 games caught this season, but no matter, even if he doesn't get to 10, he will be catcher eligible next season because he's not DHing.
Correct.
So that's a good thing.
It'll go
Ian
to most
Desmond,
games.
That would be a differentiator. Right. And people are still complaining about it, but look, don't blame us. That's the rule. Ian Desmond, that was his first game at short, wasn't it? So he's not going to make it.
Nope.
That was his third game.
Will Myers, third base, is one that I noticed was picked up. Matt Carpenter is losing his second base most likely there. I think Gleyber Torres is going to fall just shy of getting the shortstop qualification for next season.
Yeah, wow, Will Myers has played 28 games at third. How about that?
Yep.
Some pitchers to discuss here, if you don't mind. Trevor Bauer coming off a DL after the, a minor fracture in his shin, but he's going to just be the opener, and Shane Bieber will be the middle innings guy for 4 or 5 innings. Your thoughts on Trevor Bauer? You know, it's one thing to trust Chris Sale for a two inning outing, but Bauer, who's probably going to do this again next Tuesday, I'd say no. I mean, I dropped Bauer in our office league. I still feel good about that.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the utility for this year in fantasy, it's a very tough read. I'm a no on Friday just because, as you mentioned, the opener thing, it's going to be a very limited pitch count, and it's Boston. And Boston could throw out if it has clinched by that point. In other words, if it clinches today, the division, they're going to throw out a B lineup. So, all right, I get it. Maybe he'll throw 1-2 spotless innings. The other thing that's weird about it, so they're going to throw him then on 3 days rest at Chicago on Tuesday, and then their plan is, and I don't think they're going away from this, to start him on the final day in Kansas City on Sunday. So if he could somehow get up to 4 or 5 innings in that first start and then get a 90 pitch count in the Sunday one, he's a two-star pitcher who gives you enough with great matchups that he might actually be worthy of a start next week. I'm with you that I think from just the opener and the usage perspective, I'm a no, but it is curious what they're doing with him, and Bieber obviously is no longer useful, I think, for people. He's just not going to give you enough.
Well, in a way, if Shane Bieber goes 6 innings in relief, it's the same as if he started.
But it's Boston tonight. Would you use him?
No, of course not. But I wouldn't have used Severino last night, and look what he did.
Right.
I mean, we both said no on Severino. Are you using Severino next week again in a rematch against the Red Sox? Could be a less than half a lineup.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing, though, is that Severino is currently aligned for Monday and Saturday, which would be games at Tampa, at Boston. I like the at Tampa matchup because of the ballpark, extremely pitching friendly. But on that Saturday game, especially if he has a good outing here on Monday against Tampa, there's no reason to push Severino. I think he'd be on a very limited pitch count. I think they'd yank him pretty quickly in this game. I mean, they might just scratch him entirely. I feel like I'm still a no for the Boston outing. Aren't you?
I am definitely. I can't look. I don't know who's starting the one game playoff for the Yankees, but Severino has to be at least an option to pitch in that game. So I can't understand why he would start next weekend. This weekend, fine. We haven't talked a whole lot of other pitchers that are doing well. Zach Wheeler, great season. He is shut down. So you drop him. You drop him. He's not pitching again this season. Mm-hmm. Walker Buehler, man, what he did last night. 12 strikeouts in 6 innings. He is legit. I am trying to find a spot for Buehler and Jack Flaherty in my top 20 starting pitchers. I really am.
I'm loving the yellow that goes on every time he strikes out a hitter. Bring me back some good old Ferris Bueller days. I have a tough time ranking him for next year, too. Where do we put him?
I did my top 10. I finished my top 10 pitchers.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, people should check it out online, but I have Scherzer, Sale, and Kluber in my top tier. Kershaw, 4. So I relented a little bit there. DeGrom, Verlander, Nola, Snell, Cole, Syndergaard. So, and then, like, but I don't have like 10 others that have to be in the top 20. So to me, I think there is a little bit of room there where I could get Flaherty and Buehler in. You know, you got your Strasburg, Bumgarner, Greinke guys. You kind of know what they're going to do if they pitch. I mean, is there anybody I'm missing? I mean, I keep looking at this and saying, I got to be missing somebody. I don't think I am.
Yeah, we're not far off. I believe if I've... It's hard for me to absorb all 10 of those names that quickly. I believe we have the exact same 10 individuals in our top 10. We just have them slightly different by a spot or so, which I find very interesting. And I actually think that's telling about how strong and reliable we consider that top 10, that tier 1 and tier 2, however you want to break the tiers down in terms of the rankings. Very interesting that we're close on this. We also were pretty close in some of the names you just mentioned there that are in that 11 to 20, in which I feel Buehler is going to fall into. For me right now, the rough draft version, which I'm hoping to have ready for tomorrow, had Buehler at 19 among starting pitchers. Other guys who were candidates, and there still had Paxton in that group. Jack Flaherty is one who made a strong case. Jameson Taillon, who I'm a very big fan of, is one who makes a case. Mike Foltynewicz makes a case. You could expect some rebounds from maybe somewhat disappointing players like Bumgarner, like Robbie Ray, perhaps. I mean, and Patrick Corbin, where does he end up?
He has to be considered. Like at least a borderline top 20 guy, I would think. I mean, what an amazing season he's had, too.
And where he winds up is going to have a lot to say about this, because remember, even with the humidor in Arizona helping with the ballpark factor somewhat, it seems that almost anywhere he goes, if it's outside of Arizona, is likely to represent a significant ballpark upgrade.
All right, let's move along now. Here are the combo meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal! Home run, steal!
right, since our last show, the following players had a home run and a stolen base in the same game. Jorge Alfaro, the Phillies catcher, backup catcher now.
That takes some doing. Wow.
You know, he is actually pretty fast for a catcher, I gotta say. He's a very athletic, big, but fast guy.
Yeah.
He can't block pitches for his life, but I mean, he's an amazing arm. He's got power. Like, I could see him hitting 25 home runs next season if he was the starter. I don't know if he will be.
You'd rather have him or Gary Sanchez, though? Like,
no, I'd take Sanchez, but I do think Alfaro's upside is like 250 with 25 home runs. I think they might just re-sign Wilson Ramos. The other guys who had combo meals, Mike Trout, Hunter Pence, who I'm not even sure is playing next year, Freddie Freeman, and Adalberto Mondesi, who has become Eric's favorite player on Twitter, apparently.
It's unbelievable what he's done. Four combo meals already.
In 65 games, 10 home runs, 26 steals. I mean, if you extrapolate these numbers, man, he's a top 10 player. If you extrapolate these numbers, he's a top 10 player. But he's obviously not.
Numbers, yeah. That's...
Is that crazy to say that? Or is it wrong?
It's probably
even
not.
Even if you just double him, that's 20 home runs and 52 stolen bases with a good batting average and lots of runs. That's a top 10 play. Trey Turner's not doing this. So if we're calling Trey Turner a top 10 pick next year, Adalberto Mondesi is putting up numbers in a small sample, grant you, with no plate discipline, grant you, that are better than Turner's.
From your point about the pace, yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you said, doubling it gives him only 130 games, and it gives him 20 and 52 numbers, which, yeah, based especially on any sort of valuation system, is going to place him up there. The only thing is, it's going to still give him only 78 runs and 60 RBI, and that team's not going to get much better. But one thing that I looked a little bit closer into this. It does sound like Ned Yost is coming back next year. I don't think there's going to be a red light here. If he gets himself on base at any sort of reasonable rate, I mean, if it's 300 even, which it might be lower than that, unfortunately, he's going to run. I mean, I'm having a very difficult time ranking him. I can't gut-wise put him in my top 10 shortstops, but it's sure a thought.
Whit Merrifield leads off. He's a top 50 player. Mondesi bats second. He's a top 100 player. I got to do it. Right? I'm sorry. And look, I know we talk about this on every show, and every show you get a little bit closer and closer to my opinion on this, but like, he just keeps playing like this. I don't know how we can ignore it.
You're not getting me into the top 100 on him. I just can't see it. I can see Merrifield in the top 50. I'm with you on that. He's shown us enough of a sample, but this is some bad plate discipline.
The closer carousel.
All right. I did my top 10 closers for next year in a blog this week. Over the last 30 days, the number one relief pitcher on the player radar is Roberto Osuna. Jeremy Jeffress is second. Blake Trinan is third. Diaz, Leclerc, and Yates. Leclerc and Yates are closers that, as long as they have the job next year, I will be looking for them after round 15. And I would think that they're going to be there. They're not going to be ranked as top 10 closers, not like the other guys that we met. I don't know about Jeffress. It depends on Milwaukee. If Milwaukee says Jeffress is their closer, which they won't, because they have Knebel and they have Hader, then Jeffress might be like a borderline top 10 closer in rankings if Milwaukee announces that. But Leclerc and Yates wouldn't be. And I have to think that those teams are not buying like closers, so they would just let those guys close. Your thoughts on that?
I'd agree, and I'm ranking initially under the assumption that Yates and Leclerc are the guy, which means that both of them are going to get, at worst, into my top 25 relievers. One of the problems I'm finding with the rankings here is that I don't feel like we can put anywhere near as much of a weight on saves this far out from the 2019 projections as we would on the rest. So in other words, Josh Hader is showing us something about how the other stats really matter with roles up in question. And one of the reasons for that is the level of free agency available on the closer market. Among free agents currently going into the offseason, Craig Kimbrell, J.R.S. Familia, Cody Allen, David Robertson, Zach Britton, Andrew Miller, Bud Norris, Kelvin Herrera, Adam Ottavino, Ryan Madsen, Trevor Rosenthal, who could be a bit of a sleeper there in terms of getting a closer job. And of course, I'm forgetting Sergio Romo.
It's a lot of guys. Really is. I mean,
a lot of change coming.
Like two or three guys. You said 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of changes coming. One last thing on the closers before we move on. Is what Josh Hader is doing, is that sustainable for next season? That strikeout, that ERA, that whip, the wins, the saves, any of it. Is what Josh Hader is doing sustainable?
It is if he retains the elite stuff. I worry always about guys like this who pitch. I mean, he's pitched a decent amount. I mean, he's throwing multiple innings a lot, so there could be a little bit of taxing. And if it takes anything off of his stuff, there's going to be some additional regression beyond just the natural regression we can expect. I mean, he's averaging nearly 16 Ks per nine. That's tough to repeat.
Especially since he'll be pitching deep into October, because that team's been going to the World Series.
Wow.
All right, let's take a look at the schedule for this weekend.
Okay.
I don't know.
I like it.
Phillies Braves is a big one. I mean, Phillies have to win. Phillies can't lose this game. Kevin Gausman on the mound for the Braves. 5-2, 2.61 ERA since joining them. We always get sucked in with this guy. Give me his numbers for next year in Atlanta. 13 wins, 3.50 ERA, 1.20 whip, 8.2 K9s. Does that sound reasonable? Is that too much? Or are we just saying we're only trusting the good now?
I kind of like that projection. I do. I mean, you threw those numbers. I'm like, well, I wouldn't quibble with that. He's going to be back there. I think it's a very big positive that he's there instead of in Baltimore in the AL East, partially from a ballpark perspective, let alone just the league difference. I'm historically pro Gausman. I don't know that the breakthrough front of a staff potential is there anymore.
All right, that game is on ESPN Plus on Thursday night, by the way. Last game of the day, and it's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, weather permitting, as always. On Friday, Chris Sale and Trevor Bauer each going two innings on ESPN2 at 7 p.m. Eastern. Is Sale actually only going two innings again, or is he going to get to throw 75, 100 pitches? I don't know.
I think he's getting it bumped up a little bit here. He'll probably throw 65, 70 pitches, I would think, here. They need to get him ramped up for the playoffs at this point.
Okay. I would say so, and Bauer making his triumphant return as well. ESPN Plus at 9:40 Eastern has Herman Marquez of the Rockies, an amazing strikeout pitcher of late, against Zach Godley. Is there anything we can learn from Zach Godley? Because he was ranked high. You know, some people had him as a top 25 starting pitcher this year, and he didn't finish that way. So, like, I keep saying, is there anything we can learn from Blake Snell, who could easily go from 20 wins to 12 next year? Zach Godley, what do we learn from that? I mean, he had command problems in the minors, but still, like, I didn't see this bad season coming.
No, but, and I dig deep on Zach Godley because this is one of the guys I have in my Sim League rotation. So I'm always breaking down the nitty gritty here. The walk rate has always been bothersome. And that, I think, is the key takeaway here is that last year, yes, 8.5 walk rate, which was promising if you compare to his professional rates. It still wasn't great, and he had a lot of things break right, and that's one of the issues here, is that one of the reasons he's been so successful, or was last year, was because of the double play. He was so good at getting ground balls, key ground balls at the right times. He wasn't like Zach Britton, where he was getting grounders 70% of the time. It was a little bit greater than half, and he minimized hard contact. If you give back any of those gains, especially in a ballpark like he has, he's going to be inconsistent from a start-to-start basis. So hopefully we see a better version, positive regression for him. But I don't think he's capable of matching those exact rates from 2017. I think he's somewhere in between.
Saturday, you could probably pick up Ross Stripling against the Padres pretty easily there, I would say. You could pick up Zach Davies versus Trevor Williams, both those guys. I'd rather Trevor Williams has been really good. I think he still has the top ERA since the break. Jacob Junis at Detroit, another guy who seems interesting to me. Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN. It is the Red Sox and Indians an hour earlier at 7 p.m. Eastern. We do not know who's starting for the Red Sox, apparently. And the Indians are going with Adam Plutko. So maybe not the starting pitchers you want for fantasy in that game. But I'm sure you can find some interesting guys on that day if you want. Carlos Rodon might be available in your league. Wade Miley, look, I don't know how he's doing it, but he is doing it. He's at Pittsburgh. Numbers are fantastic this season. So I think Wade Miley is a guy you pick up on Sunday night, even if you're head-to-head league and you could lose the ERA and whip. Look how good he's doing. So
he is, and it's the right ballpark for that, because I've pointed out that PNC, it's terrible for right-handed power. He's the lefty, so that's a big benefit for him. Yeah, frustrating to see the last game not be able to help you in terms of catching up on things, but this is what happens when you're aligning rotations for the postseason. That is what they are doing.
Today's Hash Browns brought to you by JCPenney. Guys, at JCPenney, you can find all the great looks, whether you're in the office or on the go. Raise your game with Collection by Michael Strahan, or relax and look good on the weekend with MSX by Michael Strahan, exclusively at JCPenney. JCPenney, style and value for all. Okay. What do we got here? Hash browns. Entering the weekend. Let's see if we can help some people out. I'm sure a lot of people are looking ahead to next year. I am too. You know, I mean, definitely.
I'm looking at these 11 days. First up, it's, I'm sweating every minute. I don't know about you. I really am.
Well, once I was eliminated from that head-to-head, I'm probably going to finish third in the office league, which I'm fine with. I win my money back. I'm not going to win labor, obviously, although that race is still open. My friend Mike still has a shot.
Yep.
Our colleague Derek Cardi could still win that, too.
Yep.
Only six out. We got some Sim League stuff going on, obviously, still. I have a league where I'm number one. You have a league where you're in the playoffs. I just missed.
Not getting home field advantage in that one, though, unfortunately. It's a bummer.
No, wow. Our former colleague will have the top seed there. How about
yep.
that? John has a question. One pitcher each that you believed underachieved this season and should be targeted next year.
You know who I ranked well?
That's a good question.
It is a very good question.
It can't be a top 20 guy either. It can't be like Jose Quintana or somebody like that. It's got to be somebody that we had high hopes for.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you can't name Chris Archer or, you know, it's got to be, or Darvish. It's got to be, like Luke Weaver would make sense.
Yeah,
he went number 31 in ADP.
I wanted to rank him pretty well, yeah, but I really couldn't make the case for it when I was looking closer. The guy, he's probably too high in the ranks as Luis Castillo.
I was just going to mention that, yeah. Well, he underachieved because he was inconsistent.
Yeah,
had,
there
like,
was a little...
Pretty bad.
We mentioned the slight velocity loss, and at times he seemed to recapture it, and then it would kind of go away after that. So that's the one reason I can't just dive right back in, but I really want to. He's got exceptional stuff. This changeup is still one of the best in the game, I think. That's... Yeah, he's certainly interesting.
I think this question is more for, like, mid to late round pitchers. Like, Jake Faria of Tampa Bay. Alex Reyes, Cardinals.
Yeah.
Those guys jump out to me as, obviously, they were hurt, you know, so it's not really all their fault. But I still see huge upside. Like, nothing changed in the way I'm going to, well, I guess for Reyes, you have to view him as brittle now. But in terms of the upside for both these guys, I don't think much changed. I think they're going to both still be really good.
I'd agree with that. I think,
all right, that's one pitcher each.
Definitely some rebound on the... On that. Also, your pick from the last show,
right.
Luke Giolito.
Well, I didn't expect a ton from this year, so he didn't really underachieve this year. To me, he did what he was supposed to. Like, the question is underachieved. I don't think Giolito did. I think he started to emerge, and I'm not going to say he's the next Blake Snell, but he could be the next Fulton Evich. You know, like, that. There's Giolito has that in him, I think. Strikeout potential. If he just stops trying to strike everybody out, he just needs control.
Right, right.
Is that fair?
Yeah, and I mean, from the aspect of
ridiculous.
No, from the aspect that he did not, you know, disappoint relative to draft position. That's it's a good point. All right, so here's the guy that I'm really racking my brain about what to do with. You, Darvish.
I want no part of it.
Like, you're not going to rank him?
I didn't want him any part of him this year. No, of course. But 40? Like, I don't want to deal with this. And he was on my do not draft list this year. He must have been. I don't know. Destroy you? Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean...
Where are you ranking him?
Yeah, that's why I raised the question, is because I feel like in the initial projections said and the very, very first super rough draft, I had him outside the top 60 starters, and I kind of felt good about it. And then I said, no, you know what? I think I'm being too critical. I better swing him back up to the top 35, and I don't feel good about that either. And I feel like just splitting the difference and throwing a dart at, you know, like 45, 50 is just, you know, sitting there on the fence and not deciding. I don't like doing that.
I don't think it's not deciding. I decided that I like 40 pitchers better than you, Darvish. Better investments. But until I actually rank 40 pitchers, I don't know. I might have him better. You're right. The middle class of starting pitcher is not reliable. So, you know, and Yu Darvish's upside is clearly top 10. Let's move on. Eric writes, are there any call-ups that are decent speed additions? I don't need at-bats. Pinch running opportunities are fine. Decent speed. I mean, that Gore guy, right, on the Cubs. How many steals does he have?
Terrence?
And he doesn't even bat. Who? Right.
Terrence? Terrence Gore?
Yes, Terrence Gore, right? Yeah. Isn't he like...
The super pinch runner from bases a couple years ago. Yeah, there was a... As a matter of fact, I think Labor 2 years ago, I think the league was swinging based on just his contributions as a speedster, and I think he had like one PA in the month.
Well, he has 5 steals and 5 at-bats this month. But he's not really a great example because he hasn't barely played in the past 2 weeks.
Right.
I mean, I'm looking at guys who are running that might still be available in your league. I mean, Mondesi is obviously being added in a lot. I might get a chance to play a lot next week. Alex Gordon is stealing bases for some reason. Man, what a mess. D. Gordon.
I got to call a guy for you.
58 on base percentage since the All-Star break. Who?
Austin Meadows.
He's supposed to come up this weekend. Yeah.
I don't know how much they're going to play him. I'm curious about the playing time. Because if the Rays do fancy themselves a wild card contender still, they need to play their best assets and win games. At the same time, I think it's extremely smart to play Meadows every single inning the rest of the year and get just an initial read on how he plays. So, kind of go either way.
What does that really tell them? I don't understand what that's going to tell them, letting him play 5 games next week. That's going to tell them that he's good?
No, but I think it's better than not having done it. I think it's a good idea to just get him some reps there, get him familiar with the park, get him familiar with the game with them, the lineup. You know, I know it's not going to do an awful lot. I just think it's better than the alternative.
Brendan writes, my friends and I are considering an auction league next year. Can you discuss positives and negatives? Which do you prefer between that and snake drafting? I prefer an auction, but it does take time. But to me, like, it's once a year you're doing this, not once a week. An auction is so much better. It just is. Like, you pick 10th, you're not getting Mike Trout. You're not getting Mookie Betts. And you're in an auction, you can get them both. You can literally get them both in an auction. You can do a Stars and Scrubs. You can have a balanced team where you don't spend more than 30 on any player. An auction is just so much fun, and it changes. Like, during the auction, you have money, you don't. Somebody's doing this, then you do that. I mean, you agree, right? An auction's so much better. It's just, it's a little bit more of a commitment for that day.
Yeah, I fully agree on this. I mean, the positives, as you wrapped up there, perfectly, I think, is that it does give you a lot more control over the individual players if you have a strong leaning on an individual. It guarantees you the right to claim that player, whereas in a draft, you do have to think about when that player is going to be taken around you with other picks. The other thing, too, is it gives you the luxury of crafting your roster in the way that you want. You might not want to spend very much on pitching and be forced into having to take those at times that you wouldn't in a traditional draft, so greater control. The negatives, as you mentioned, the time. The other thing, too, is I am finding that people who are not willing to invest the time into coming up with the detailed cheat sheet, putting up the proper preparation, knowing the deeper tiers of auctions, they get taken advantage of in an auction. You find that mistakes are feasted upon a little bit more in that format, so you need to have, if it's 12 teams, 12 people who are very committed to that strategy and being properly prepared for it, because the worst thing you have is in a draft, you're never going to see Austin Meadows or Tyler Glasnow taken in the first 10 rounds, ever. It's not going to happen. In an auction, they might come up, and you have to be ready.
And sometimes that reminds you that they're available. One of the things I like about an auction in a way is like, oh, I forgot about this guy, but he's being bid on right now, so I can go the extra dollar.
Right.
In a draft, you can't do that.
You will never have that situation where, you're in the 21st round of a draft, you mistakenly scratched a name off, and you're like, oh, man, I totally forgot he was there. You're right. You have a chance to bid.
Joey says, I need wins this weekend. Brad Keller at Daniel Norris on Sunday. Who has the better chance of getting me a W?
Keller or Norris? I'm taking
Keller.
Keller.
I'll take Keller. Bill writes in on Twitter as well. Who is better over the next five seasons, Adalberto Mondesi or Bo Bichette?
Wow.
Bo Bichette's still in the minors.
Yeah.
How?
How?
That's an interesting question because...
How is he still in the minors? Gee, I wonder.
No. I know why he's still in the minors. I'm just saying, like, by this time next year, Bo Bichette's going to be a big name in fantasy, I think.
Yep.
Now, he might end up being Dansby Swanson in the majors, but he also might be Bregman. Or he might be in between. Mondesi, we don't know. He's been amazing in 3 months this year, but we don't know for sure. Pick one over the next five seasons. Who's it going to be for fantasy?
Yeah, and you know, this is the question's relevant for this reason alone, and that is that the playing time absolutely matters. I'm still taking Bichette for 5 years, but you might be getting four
really?
Of them. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a superior player, I think.
Of course he is, but we're talking fantasy baseball here.
Yep.
One of these guys has a shot to steal 50 bases, and it ain't Bichette. That's all I'm saying. I don't think... Look, we're not asking who the better player is in real life. This isn't a sim league. This is for fantasy purposes.
Yeah.
Right now, we already know that Mondesi can play. We don't know about Bichette. Like I said, Bichette could be Swanson. I'm taking Mondesi. Mondesi hate on you.
I don't know. You see, that's the thing. Like, I believe that the number I was going to come up with in the overall was 125, which means he's not far off the top 100 threshold you're talking about. But he is a very flawed player. Trey Turner's a superior player to him in fantasy and in the real game, and it's not a contest.
All right, that is all for today's show. As the music's winding down, we thank you so much for listening to the Fantasy Focus, not only today, not only this week, but for however much of the season you have. Fantasy Focus Baseball, we know you have other options, including with football, where they do the Fantasy Focus Football every day. Please listen to that as well. They are our colleagues and our friends, and they do a fantastic job. We'll be back for two shows next week, so please listen then. And in that stance, for Tristan, for Anthony, and for everyone else who makes this show great, have an awesome weekend. Everything is
awesome. Darkness. The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.